Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Ship Talk. I know it's been a little bit of time since we had our last episode, but don't worry, we have something great today. Today, I'm joined with Vlad. He's the author of Establishing SRE Foundations. But Vlad, maybe for the listeners and viewers, maybe a quick minute background about yourself and who you are.
Yeah, sure, Ravi. Thanks for the invitation to the podcast. I'm really excited to be here and to talk to you about all things SRE, which is Site Reliability Engineering. So that's a new thing, so not everybody might know the abbreviation by now. And I work for Siemens Healthineers. So I'm a head of R&D for the digital health platform we've got at the company. And it supports digital services that are developed throughout the company and also used by other companies in the healthcare space. So looking forward to explaining to you what we've learned on our journey to introducing SRE in the organization.
Yeah, perfect, Vlad. I'm very excited. I mean, it's a lot of times, I know you and I talked a little bit before the podcast as a cheat, you know, like get to know each other and kind of discuss how the podcast goes. But I'm really excited. It's kind of, you know, being in a technology space that I'm in, like purely a software space, is a lot of times it's engineering ethics don't come into question too much. Like, it's not life and death, right? Like, it's like, oh, we can always roll back. You can't quite roll back with someone's life, or you can't roll back with like medical devices. Like the you know, the establishment there, it's a lot, the stakes are a lot higher because human life's involved. Yeah. And this is, we can kind of interweave that story too, saying, hey, you know what, if it was a software company, this could happen, but at, you know, Siemens Healthcare, like, we have to take more due care because people's lives are at stake. But why don't we start with this? Like, so SRE, you know, since the Google book came out, you know, like, it's been getting a lot more traction. But why would anybody invest in SRE practices to start with? So let's say someone was brand new, you know, the company has never invested in the science of SRE. Maybe they had the art of SRE. You know, our website went down. Now we need to make sure we have two replicas of it now instead of one. But why would someone invest, or an organization decide to invest in SRE practices or an SRE organization?
Right. So you would start thinking about SRE when you have got some way in order to operate your services reliably at scale. Mm-hmm. Right. So once you put up some services that are used by others, then you need to ensure that those services are operated somehow. And there will be a point in time where, if you are successful with your services, that the number of users of the service will grow. And also, if you are successful with setting up the delivery processes at your organization, then your teams will also accelerate with pushing change to production. All right. So that on the one hand, you've got then more and more change in production happening by different teams. But on the other hand, you've got more and more users using the services at the same time. Right. So that means that the services will have more and more stringent availability requirements. So despite the change being pushed to production, you need to be available as much as possible, because if you go down, then the growing user base will then suffer more and more, because typically you would deploy something in the cloud in order for it to be used by many people. Yep. And therefore you've got those central instances running and you need a structured approach to manage this. So you need a structured approach to manage the operations of services like this. And this is where you would need to come to some process of how to do this. And you would start looking around, okay, so how do people do this? And inevitably you will arrive at SRE.
Nice. Yeah, nicely said. Yeah, it's like kind of like both sides are starting to grow, right? Like, as you know, if it's the server, like, for example, if you write a service just for yourself, it's like, is it really a service or just, you know, just like a user in the system, it's you. But at the whole point of like writing any software, it's for other people to use it, right? Or like to benefit or be part of a system that's like, you know, helping multiply like the effect of like of a person. And yeah, you said it very nicely, like kind of like modern software engineering, it's about velocity. But if you kind of peel back, like, you know, the human psychology about it, or even the system size, like topology or psychology about it, it's anytime you introduce change, you're introducing risk. Right. Like, it's like, you know, if nothing ever changed, there would be no risk, but there would be no innovation. Right. And so like in, you know, a modern environment where there's lots of competition, a lot of competition for users, you know, even more intrinsically, like, you want to better the craft of engineering, okay, we could do a little better job, but you have to introduce change at some point. And you said it very well, like the innovation or the velocity of change has increased so much. And also like the user traffic has increased. And so like how do you mitigate both of them? You want to make sure you don't stifle innovation, but also you don't want to make sure that your users are like so upset that they go somewhere else. Or in the case of Siemens Healthcare, is that at some point someone's life will be at stake, right? So you want to make sure that you're protecting human life at the same point. So that's awesome. Yeah, and so I think another question would be like, is there a kind of a is it worth that? At what point is it like art versus science? Like, is making the investment worth it? For example, let's say I'm just a stodgy manager saying, you know what, our service should never go down. Do we need an SRE for that, or like what do we what's kind of the negotiation there? Like, oh no, we had our Ravi.com went down too many times, so now I need to hire an SRE. Is it is it is that the is that the critical time to do it, or is there should we be investing in reliability before like an outage occurs?
So I think to answer this, we can go back to the origins of SRE. So why did actually SRE come into existence at Google? So Google was growing exponentially at some point in time, and with their operations capabilities back then, they required more and more operations engineers in order to run Google, and that wasn't sustainable. So they were really growing very fast, and they couldn't grow the workforce for operating the services linearly with the growth of users. So they needed to come up with something, and that's something that became SRE. So that means with SRE, you are able to run your services in such a way that you don't need to scale linearly the number of operations engineers with the number of users that are going onto your platform, onto your services. So this is also where the economic argument can be made to that stingy manager that you mentioned, to say that, yeah, we could do this for some time, but at some point in time, if we are successful, if the traffic really starts to grow exponentially, we just cannot afford of also exponentially growing our operations team.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like it's kind of like in the modern platform engineering type of world is that, like being an SRE, I view as like a highly specialized engineer, right? So like you're not going to have one SRE per like Scrum team or per Agile team. Like they're handling like multiple teams or multiple organizations, and like how do you go about making sure that the expertise that's built, right, with SRE is like there and disseminated across the organization. And your example, Google, is really good because they can hire thousands of engineers. But I think I forget the last SRE con I was at, they had some like statistic, like they have like for every like 10,000 engineers, there's like 1.5 SRE or something like odd. It was some low number. It was like, oh, there's like less than like 1% of the engineers are SREs at Google. But per their academic and scientific like kind of ways of driving the discipline home, they're able to, as you say, like scale that. Being greedy, because I have an expert, I have Vlad here, so I like to ask greedy questions. It's always like a common, like since the dawn of time, in technology, there's innovation and there's control, right? So like, hey, you have to create new ideas, but you don't want to break things versus control. Like, how do you balance innovation and control, Vlad? So like, you have to support changes, but you also have to support the criticality of what you're working on, like. Any advice for anybody trying to balance like an open-ended answer, like no right or wrong, just how do you tackle that problem, innovation versus control?
Yeah, I think this is where SRE really has its strength because it actually aligns the entire organization on operational concerns very well, so that questions like this can actually be answered more scientifically than kind of in an art way. So what will happen under the SRE framework is that you will get onto the table the people that develop the services, so the developers. Then you'll get on the same table the people that run those services, so the operations engineers, although they could be developers as well. But people who are fulfilling that role will be at the table as well. And then you will also get at the same table the people that are responsible for those services as products. So you'll get the product managers at the same table. All right, so then this set of people, so the trio of product managers, operations engineers, and developers, they will set for each service so-called service level objectives, which means then from the reliability standpoint, what is the service level that each of the services that we offer shall provide to the users? And because they will agree on those objectives, and the SRE infrastructure will then monitor the fulfillment of those objectives, you will then have data to act upon where the SRE infrastructure will detect the services that actually don't fulfill those objectives that the people that are developing the service, operating the service, and then offering the service as a product agreed upon to be useful to be offered. Right. So therefore, then whenever you've got then data from production that says, okay, so this service doesn't fulfill the service level objectives that we thought it should, then you've got the conversation ongoing, which is the right one about, okay, so do the service level objectives that we thought the services should provide actually are reasonable ones, right? Or if they are not reasonable, then why don't we lower our thresholds? And if the service level objectives are reasonable, because every time we break our SLOs, so service level objectives stand for SLOs, we actually break the user experience of the users so that the SLO breaches become the user experience breaches. And if so, then why don't we actually invest in more reliability there in order to fulfill the SLOs so that they actually don't break the user experience? And this is where you kind of gradually over time get the organization into. That you've got data to work with that is actionable, where you can actually invest in areas where it really matters from the user's point of view, and where the data shows that although you, for example, don't fulfill certain service level objectives, but they don't lead to the user experience breaches, then you just lower your service level that you offer and you continue running.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's a very experienced answer, right? Like, hey, if you have to balance innovation versus control, actually using SLOs are actually very, very wise, because like now everyone's at the same table. You say, hey, you know what? Let's get our objectives out before we start bickering over like, well, we need to get this out, or like, no, you shouldn't do that. Like, if once you have like a like usually it's like a communication thing. Like, hey, this is our base level understanding. Like, you know what? We need to reply to the user in 500 milliseconds or less, 95% or 99.5. 95 would be kind of bad, right? Like, that's a Robbie
Right.
service. 95% of the time availability is something I would write. So like, yeah, it's just getting that out in the open and say, okay, and then well, everybody kind of like is, we'll work together, right? It's not like, like us versus them or like this group versus that group. It's like once there's a base understanding, kind of just kind of circling around and saying, hey, you know what? Let's try to work within that framework of producing something that's users will be delighted with, and also we're not killing ourselves for reliability. SLOs, one of always like a hot button topic, yeah, in SRE land. I always like to ask like folks who are very experienced in SRE, is like something I wasn't very good at is if you have to renegotiate an SLO, how do you go about doing that? So maybe give a quick for the listeners who don't quite know what an SLO is, maybe give a quick this definition one is, but also they are quite tricky to renegotiate. But I want to hear your experience if you ever had to renegotiate an SLO before, and typically, how do you go about doing it?
So, first of all, to the definition of SLO. So, an SLO is, as the name suggests, a service level objective for a service. If you've got a service, then first of all, before defining the SLOs, you need to define so-called service level indicators that are important for that service. And the service level indicators is a fancy name for something that people in computer science have known for years. So these are typical utilities that are important in the non-functional requirements world. So, for example, you can have things like availability, things like latency, things like consistency, things like durability, and so on. And these will be different service by service. But what's very common for all services is, for example, availability. So something is available is kind of the basic property of a service, because if it's not available, then you don't need to go and look at other SLIs, like for example latency and so on, because if it's not available, well, then it's down and not usable, right? So therefore, I think it's easy to start with availability because it's going to be applicable to a very broad range of services. So then once you've defined one of your important SLIs, service level indicators, as availability, you can then say, okay, so what is actually for this particular service that sits there in my service network, a reasonable availability. So does it sit somewhere really at the bottom of the network, or is it somewhere at the top, or is it somewhere in the middle, and so on? So who is dependent on that particular service? And then because you've got at the table again the trio of a product manager, operations engineer, and developer, not one of these parties makes the decision, but they agree on what's actually important. And they've got different viewpoints, right? So a developer knows how the service is actually implemented. The operations engineer knows the actual behavior of the service in production or in different production environments or under different loads and so on. And the product manager has got a vision for the service that they want to offer to the outside world, right? So these are three distinct viewpoints, and they need to come together in order for a definition of an SLO to make sense. That said, at the very beginning, when there is still no data from production at all, it will only be just a guess. And it's important to let the people know that this will be just the initial SLO that we are setting here, because this is what we're thinking. But then, of course, we will be proven wrong by production data once the SRE infrastructure actually has started tracking that SLO against the actual performance of the service. And this then starts a very powerful feedback loop, where then the trio then first of all comes up with an SLO that seems to make sense to them. Then they feed it into the SRE infrastructure. Then the SRE infrastructure then looks at the fulfillment of the SLO, then starts doing the alerting. When the SLO gets not fulfilled, starts also generating long-term statistics. So let's say every 3 months you can have a look at your performance for each service in the last 3 months, and then see which ones are fulfilling the SLOs and which ones are not. And this is then the process that kind of running from there forever. So if you're doing it like this, then I think you already kind of woven in the renegotiation of SLO into the process. Because once you look at your long-term trend, so once, say, at the end of a 3 month period, you look at the previous 3 months, then you will already see that some services are not fulfilling the SLOs, and you'll have then the necessary conversation, which is, okay, so do we need to have that high level of that stringent SLO for that particular service, for that particular operation of the service, or can we lower the threshold? If we lower the threshold, will that lead to broken user experience or not? And if people at the table then are saying, okay, so I think we could actually give it a try, so let's lower the SLO, then this is already kind of an act of renegotiation, right? And if, on the other hand, the SLOs are fulfilled, but you still, over the last 3 months, got a fair share of customer complaints, then, okay, so actually we need to tighten the SLOs, because the current level, although we are fulfilling it, but it still leads to customer complaints. So we need to tighten the SLOs. And that's, again, an act of renegotiation of the SLO. So this is how I would go about it. I think the core of the matter is that you establish initially that feedback loop, and you never let people go out of the feedback loop.
That very solid answer. That's as good as I ever heard it. Like SLOs are not static, right? They change, they adapt. And I think a lot of times, especially for myself, there's a difference between a greenfield service, like something that's new for the first time, versus there's a brown, something's been running for since the dawn of time. And it's understanding there's differences. Like if you don't have data, you don't have data. Like if we you and I drop the service right now, we don't have any historics because this is brand new. Like this is version, 0.0.1 of what we're building. And so we don't know versus oh, it's version 100, it's been running since the mid-90s. We have a good idea of what's going on, and that just making sure that it's continuous improvement, right? Just having that the feedback loop, as you mentioned. And also they're not static, right? I think, at least in my experience, sometimes folks view SLOs as a little bit static, but data can feed them, and you can kind of readjust. And I really like that answer. Shifting a little bit of gears here. So since that you work for Siemens, maybe talk about the journey of when folks hear, especially myself, hear about medical devices or in the medical field, you kind of imagine, oh, you know what, there's 10 hospitals and someone has to drive around to each with a USB stick and install updated software. But today, and Siemens is actually very modern. You're actually representing a SaaS-based model. That's a lot of software is gone. But maybe you can talk about that journey. If change is not that instant, how do you ensure quality? And this is where your criticality of your role comes into play. But maybe a minute or two on the Siemens journey and just how that's changed, maybe the S3 practices that you practice at Siemens.
You are spot on with the memory stick that is used by the service engineer going from a hospital department to a hospital department to a hospital department and so on. So this is actually one of the reasons why the digital health platform that I'm responsible for exists, in order to avoid those memory sticks and so on, and in order to bring the innovation of cloud and the possibilities of cloud into the healthcare domain. So actually, you are absolutely spot on with the memory stick, because one of the applications that we offer does exactly this. So it literally replaces the memory stick and the service engineer, because you can update things over the cloud. Or there is actually another example in the healthcare domain where, instead of memory stick, they just use a taxi driver. So the taxi driver brings ACD from one hospital to another hospital, and that of course can be done over the cloud, and this is what we do using the platform. So the journey that we had is similar to the answer that I gave a couple of minutes ago when you asked about when you would introduce SRE in an organization. So we also had a moment where our services started being used more and more and more and more. So we had really a growing user base, and we had a growing user base from several dimensions. So on the one hand, just the number of users accessing the platform, but also on the other hand, the number of devices connected to the cloud from hospitals also has been growing. And what hasn't been growing back then were our operational capabilities. So we basically kind of just operated the platform the way we happened to do. And it wasn't a very structured process. And this is where we started feeling that every time there's an outage, there is more and more and more impact of this outage. So basically, if they've got an outage, like today, then it's one blast radius. But if we've got the same type of outage, say 2 weeks from now, then there will be more users and there will be more devices connected to it. And therefore, the impact is just getting kind of exponentially larger every time we get an outage. And also, every time we get an outage, our operations capabilities didn't allow us to see improvement, in the sense that, okay, so we coped with that outage within a couple of hours, and the next time we've got something like this, we can do this, in 1 hour and so on. So we kind of didn't see the progress of improvement of our operational capabilities. And that led us to searching for some alternative, or searching just for methodologies that people use in order to run services reliably at scale. And this is where we then learned that there is that thing called SRE, and this is where we started introducing it. So this is kind of the journey of where we came from.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah. It's surely, the ability to get like more updates quicker than someone can buy a taxi or a courier or a service engineer going hospital to hospital. It helps everybody because you can like make quicker changes and get the most updated version or critical fixes that are out there. I have three more questions for you. And they're pretty, I think they're pretty good questions. They're pretty interesting questions. So I've worked for a company called Harness. And so like, we, internally, like when we want to experiment with something, we usually get a quarter. Like I'll get like 90 days. Like, okay, you have 90 days to try this out and see what the results are. Let's say we'll start from scratch. Let's say that we're just working at, some firm, and we decide, you know what, we get 90 days to implement an SRE organization or practice. Like we get 1.5 engineers. We're building the practice from like just the day one. We get to meet and say, okay, we've reached that point that we should. What would you do in the first 90 days, right? Like if you just had, a small team of just folks who want to change reliability for the better at any organization, like what can you do in 90 days? Like, is there much? Is there a lot? Is there a little? Or what do you recommend? This is an open-ended question again.
So you said 1.5 engineers. That's actually quite a lot. So I would say I get a capacity of 1.5 engineers. So that's great. I think you can do a lot in 90 days with 1.5 interested engineers. And so I think what needs to happen is, first of all, you need to find a team that would be willing to jump on board and try something with the SRE infrastructure that doesn't exist yet. Right, but you need to have a consumer, right? So you need to have somebody who would be eager to try. So that's one thing. But then on the SRE infrastructure side, you need to start building the infrastructure, And here, I would say the very minimum that you could do that you then could concentrate on is, again, you just select one most important SLI that would be applicable to a broad range of services, which would be availability. And then you allow using the infrastructure for the engineers to specify the SLOs, right? So then the first thing would be, okay, so SLOs can be defined, number one. Then number two, the SLOs can be deployed to the most interesting environments. And that needs to be done in a way that can be done very quickly by the people using the infrastructure, so by the consumer team, right? So they now have got the ability to specify the SLOs and then to deploy the SLOs to be tracked by the infrastructure very conveniently in any deployment environment that they are interested in. Could be production environment, could be any intermediate environment. Right. So once that is in place, then the next thing is the implementation of some alerting mechanism. And here, if you look at the Google books, then you'll find, chapters about this. But I think to start with, you can just implement a simple algorithm that would balance a little bit the timeliness of alerts and the effectiveness of alerts. So timeliness, that means you don't alert kind of immediately once the SLO threshold has been broken, but you kind of wait a little bit until more error budget has been consumed and then you alert. And effectiveness is that you alert on something that kind of makes sense. So I would say you just implement a little bit of these smarts in the algorithm so that it's just a little bit better than just alerting as soon as a threshold gets broken. And I think with that, you are already in a realm where a team can do much more than before. First of all, they can define the SLOs for the services that they own. Secondly, they can get those SLOs tracked in any environment that they're interested in. And third, they can get alerted whenever the SLOs get broken. And that then enables them to have that powerful feedback loop that I talked about before. Right. So then you work with the team to really get at the table the product manager, the operations engineer, and the developer, and you kind of practice that feedback loop with them. Right. So you meet every couple of weeks or so and say, okay, so this is what we fed the infrastructure, this is what we got back, and so on. So shall we adjust the SLO or not? Right. And then additionally, you start, if we are talking about 3 months, then you start showing them also already kind of the long-term trend. Long term in that case, because we just had 3 months, so we spent quite some time on implementing all this and just trying things out. So maybe long term would be, sort of you show them the data that you aggregate over several weeks or so. And then you say, okay, so the short term here is what we got the alerts and so on, and we adapted the SLOs. But long term, if you divide the time into, say, fortnights or so, here for the last, I don't know, 3 fortnights, this is what we saw. These are the services that fulfill the SLOs. These are the services that fulfill the SLOs. So would that data help you with prioritizing reliability or not? So basically, I think over that period, you already elevated the team quite a bit, right? So first of all, they defined together the SLOs, number one. That didn't happen before. Second, they got feedback from production continuously whether the SLOs are fulfilled or not. Third, you involve them into the kind of build measure learn feedback loop where they started actively talking about whether the SLOs made sense and whether they led to the user experience breaches or not. And four, you also showed them that this is not just for the immediate SLO breaches. This is also for the long-term trend analysis that can be fed into the prioritization. So actually, you kind of prototype the whole cycle with them. And I think with 1.5 engineers, one team interested, that should be possible within 90 days.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, great answer. Yeah, I think it's very very pragmatic. Like, hey, you know what? Teaching other teams how to measure, right? Like, we're all, like I said, I can admit I'm pretty bad at measuring sometimes. Like, you just get focused on building. It's like, oh, we do have to measure this. You can't improve what you can't measure. And yeah, having that kind of focus on, okay, let's look at measuring, let's look at learning, can we improve anything? And then it's kind of like organic after that, like showing incremental success builds success. So as you kind of like, show some improvements, some small experiments, that's awesome. Yeah, perfect answer. Thank you for that. Kind of last two questions here, for the listeners or the viewers. One would be, I'll take it in this order. So someone who's been in the estuary industry for a long time, like, is there any sort of like trends you're noticing? Like, say if you compare when you started your estuary journey to like today, if we had to say, you know what, we're doing things a little bit differently today than we did a couple of years ago. Like, oh, our SLOs are more aggressive, or oh, we have different practices or policies in place, or oh, you know, it's just we're continuing to evolve as a practice. Like, any people, process, technology that you say, you know what, this is really cool, and anything on the horizon that you think will be really, really neat as the estuary practice continues to evolve.
Yep. I think the tooling overall just got better. So across the board, right? So the log analysis tooling is better than also things that do the alerting like PagerDuty, Ops Genie, and so on got better. So I think kind of the tooling in general just is better than it was, I don't know, 6 years ago or so. Well, that's one. Another thing is the potential to use AI analysis for things like analyzing the logs. Then things like feeding lots of stuff that you've got in your SRE kind of sort of process description, if you wish. Into an LLM and then having that LLM support the operations engineers when they do the work. So typically SRE consists of lots of dashboards and you know, you need to know where these things are. You need to know where the postmortems are. You need to know where the runbooks are. You need to know where the logs are for that particular service. You need to know where that service is deployed to, which production environments. And you need to know a lot of stuff, so therefore you need to kind of be on a team for quite a long time in order to kind of have everything handy. And I think this is something that can definitely be supported by using LLMs and just having a kind of operations copilot and just ask the copilot, okay, so you know, show me the logs of this, so show me the last postmortems on this service, you know, show me this and that and that. I think there's quite a potential there.
Awesome.
And
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
yeah, and overall, so I think what we're doing more and more, we are involving more and more management layers in reliability conversations by offering more and more aggregated data about what's going on.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. So it sounds like anything like as this becomes more important, the tooling's gotten certainly like absolutely gotten a lot better to help you like make sense of all the data. Because data has always been there, but it's like how can we like process it, or how can we, you know, find like trends, and then also like bringing in like more people in the organization. So that's just the engineering work, it's a business or executive staff. Last question. Always like to end the podcast on this. And again, it's one of those intrinsic open-ended questions. Let's say that, you know, you have the ability to meet yourself when you graduate university. So Vlad, you met Vlad on the street the day you graduated university, right? Like current Vlad and, you know, Vlad fresh out of university. What would be some advice you would tell yourself, right? Like, you know, don't go to jail is a popular one, you know, don't get arrested. But like, is there any sort of advice? It could be life advice, technology advice, career. Like, this is always a little bit difficult, but what would you tell yourself, you know, if you had to look back? The fresh university grad Vlad.
I think
Yeah.
I know. So, when I was at the university, then I was really laser focused on the hard stuff. So, I was really laser focused on things like networking and databases and programming and so on. And there were actually also opportunities at the university to delve into the soft stuff. So, like, for example, you know, speaking, presentations, relationship building, and so on. And I just didn't pay enough attention to this at university. So I would have given an advice. I would have given advice to myself to actually kind of not neglect those things during my university time, but actually also spend some time on learning into these areas because then down the road, they were as important in professional life as the hard
Perfect. Yeah, that's
stuff.
very great advice for anybody. And so cool. Well, Vlad, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. If you want to grab a copy of his book, Establishing SRE Foundations, feel free to grab one. I'm sure Vlad will be happy you purchased a copy of his book. But Vlad, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Robbie. I really enjoyed it and hope that that'll be useful to your listeners.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.